Hello, hello, hello. Ernest Cole, sooner or later. Now, okay, I got Ernest on the phone. Oh, we just got to take now. He said, let's see. I'm supposed to put this on. Hello? 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 He's on call. Hello? Talk, Ernest.
Hello, how are you?
Can
you
Ernest?
Hello, hello. 1, 2, 3, test.
Well, I hear you a little bit.
DC, can you hear me?
Yes.
You sound like you're far away.
Well, how are we doing now?
You still sound like you're far away.
Oh, no, it's perfect. Oh, perfect. Okay, it's working. Oh, Ernest, it's working.
Yay!
Don't, that's too loud. It's too loud. Okay, hiya. Hi, Ernie. How you doing?
Ernest, hi. How are you, DC? I'm super.
Okay, a little bit loud. You can't be so loud. Hold on. Say it
okay.
again. Say it again. Talk again. I'm doing this myself, Ernest.
Okay.
There. Okay, I got you down to a good level. Yeah, because I used to have a producer, but he hasn't shown up in like 6 months. But it's working. Hey, say it a little bit more.
Say again. I can't hear you.
Oh,
talk
how
louder.
Perfect. Yeah, we're on the air. Okay, cool. Okay, now, this is Ernest Cole, and I'm calling him. I've known him from an old friend, longtime friend. And he sent me a message on Facebook, and he said, you know, he just put out this CD. Of course, I'm on it. Thank you, Ernest, for inviting me. It's a great CD, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And
I'm
not just saying that. I mean, I'm so impressed with I'm going to play about an hour of the tracks, the full-length tracks, after we get finished with our chit-chat here. Now,
oh, yay!
Yeah, I know I'm going to give it a whole highlight. Maybe pay one half of it this week and another half next week. Okay,
oh, that's
so wonderful. But let's talk about you first of all. Sooner or Later, I played Sooner or Later, which is a great tune. That's a great remix. Who did it? In New York.
Well, there actually was 20 remixes that came out on the maxi single.
Only 20?
And, well, of course, the New York remixers were on it. Brian Rise is on it. The Royalty remixers are on it. The Yankee Boys, Carnaby, Funker Nut was on it. Peter Tanako was on it. Jimmy Michaels, who you know is on it, is on it. And Mike Morano is on it.
Well, who did this one, the New York mix?
It was done by the fabulous, they're incredible, the New York remixers. And all of those keyboard parts were played by an amazing, amazing programmer named Keith Kemper. And he's the most wonderful guy to work with. In fact, I have just worked with him for the last, I think we started at 9 o'clock last evening, and we went to 12 o'clock today working on a new track. And I only got 3 hours of sleep, and, like, this is my wake-up right now.
Well, good morning. Okay, you know what? You know what was good? You know, I love it. I'm just saying it's a terrific remix. No, I'm very impressed with it, yeah. Okay, now, I always start off my interviews, no matter who it is, with pretty much the same questions. Where were you born, Ernest?
I was born in a really small town way upstate New York called Norwich.
Okay. And what was the first record you ever bought? The first one that you ever went, when you were a little kid and you had money in your pocket,
oh,
and you went out and you bought a record. What
quite,
was the first
quite,
one?
Quite well, because I was in the show, and it was South Pacific.
South Pacific? What, the soundtrack?
Uh-huh. I played Jerome at age 7.
How do you like
so
that? That was the soundtrack with
soundtrack
Mary Martin
too.
and
I
the movie soundtrack?
I did it with Jane Powell and Howard Keel. You know, I played the little boy, D.T. Moore.
Oh, Jane Powell. She was my favorite. Oh, please, what an angel.
Yes, she was so wonderful.
I had
to
records
work with
by Jane Powell. She was a big movie star, and I loved her voice. And I have a recording of True Love. True Love. And it's my favorite one. There's a million versions of that, but hers. I really adored Jane Powell. She was so pretty. Oh, so you worked with her, huh?
What, yes, at age 7.
Yeah.
And what a way to start into the business.
Well,
and,
I guess so.
And my father was played by Howard Keel, and the two of them were very famous because they did a film that was very famous in the old, I believe it was MGM.
Yeah, MGM.
Called Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Oh, big hit record, big hit movie, yeah. Okay, so was it the movie soundtrack or the Broadway soundtrack?
I believe I brought the movie because it was the one with Mitzi Gaynor, I think.
Yeah,
was
Mitzi
on the
Gaynor.
Cover.
Yeah, Mitzi Gaynor. And, I don't think she did her own singing though.
I think
sure,
it was
somebody
else. I think she did.
Did she?
Because
I don't know.
She did in No Business Like Show Business,
okay.
I remember that.
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Okay, so that was the first one. What was your first rock record, rock and roll record? You couldn't. Yeah.
I can easily remember that because I covered it. It was the Partridge Family's I Think I Love You.
Oh, wow. Partridge Family. That's David Cassidy, right?
Yes. And I actually covered that in 1985 on Unidisc Records. And it was one of my first records to come out after I had done all the Bobby Orr records where he stole my vocals, and you know that whole situation.
Yeah, yeah. I know Bobby Orlando. I knew him. I don't know him well. I knew Bobby and the whole thing.
Right.
I was going to say, did you read David Cassidy's book?
No, I didn't even know he had a book.
Oh, he has a book. You know, and they were talking about, when I get from the morning, I listen to WNYC Public PBS Radio, Leonard Lope, mm-hmm. and all those people, you know, and they were discussing Justin Bieber, who I really enjoy.
Oh my goodness,
I enjoy him. I enjoy him. I think he's cute. But and they were talking about young teeny bopper kids like that who become so huge, such big stars.
It's so funny that you say Justin Bieber because on the, you know how YouTube does the pics?
No, I don't know.
Sooner or Later video came up right next to Mistletoe. And I was like, how are you comparing me to Justin Bieber?
For sure,
yeah. I'm not getting this.
Well, I don't know either. But in any case, David Cassidy wrote, he wrote the only book about being a teenage star. I mean, it's so, you know, he was
well,
so honest and so nitty gritty.
Was...
Well, you know, and I'll tell you something, it's a nightmare, actually, the way he, and he, you know, the guy, and the, I forget what it was about. And there was another author who was writing a book about teenage celebrity or something. You know how one thing leads to another. And then, and they said,
Justin
Bieber should read that David Cassidy book.
Actually.
Huh?
When I first met you, I was only a teenager. I had just finished Avant Garde, and I was 16 at Stein Eileen Berlin's. Do you remember that?
I mentioned that before I made the call, how I met you and Grace in the same evening up at Stein Eileen
Berlin.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I believe First Choice was also there.
I don't know. I don't remember that. Yeah, just remembering Grace and you was enough. I adore Grace. What can I say? What was I thinking about? Oh, but you have a history of, weren't you in Rocky Horror Show or something like that?
Yes, I was. I was the first person to play Frankenfurter after Tim Curry.
Okay. When what year was that? That was before you made Disco Records or what?
No, that was after.
After?
Because they didn't, originally the show, the musical was never a big hit. And then the movie came out, and the movie really bombed, and then it started to become a cult, you know, item.
I know, big time
and,
cult, yeah.
And then it was decided to be revived, and I got cast as Frankenfurter. And it was a really strange event, because opening night, we just thought it was going to be like a normal musical. But it was the weirdest thing I ever walked into in my life, because people were screaming out things, people were throwing things out.
Because they were familiar with it because of the movie, right?
Right, and we didn't know how to deal with it, you know, like, because normally if you're doing a show, you would pause, you know, for applause and stuff, but you're not used to having people screaming out things
for
like,
sure,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Do it, Brad, or,
Meatloaf,
you know,
was
say
in that.
It.
Wasn't Meatloaf in that show, too?
Yes,
he was. Meatloaf, yeah.
And so actually what we the director had us do is to take our scripts and write down every line that the audience would say, and we had to learn what the audience would say.
Okay.
But it was so dangerous because, you know, most of the cast at one point are in those high platform heels.
Sure.
And they threw rights onto the stage.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was like this nightmare with like it was like you were skating on rice and heels.
Okay, great. Yeah, those creepy platform shoes are back again. Women, I think.
Oh my God, I couldn't wait to get them off every night. They really hurt. I do not know how drag queens do it.
Yeah,
it's so painful.
Well, you know what? So, so you were in Rocky Horror Show on Broadway after you made. The original records with Sly and Eileen?
Yes. Well, my first Broadway show was I did several Broadway shows before that. My first musical was South Pacific. Then I did. I thought I was going into King and I, but they thought I was too young to play the young prince, so I didn't get that. And they put. But Rodgers and Hammerstein were the original producers, the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization, were the original producers of Annie Get Your Gun. So they put me into the revival of Annie Get Your Gun playing Little Jake, which was actually a role younger than I played in South Pacific.
Who played Annie?
A woman named Janice Page.
I know.
A lot of people don't know
another
who
movie
she
star,
is.
Sure, Janice Page, of course. She was a big star.
And
she was
again,
a big star.
I got a chance to work with her.
Yeah.
When she played the role of Mame, and I played John Patrick, and they dyed my hair blonde.
Well, how? Why? So while you were doing all this Broadway stuff, were you running around and doing discos too as well, singing you know live to tracks and discos or? And what part
I
did
I was? Well, not when I was really little, but when I started to grow up, like during the avant-garde, yes, I was being snuck in the back door of studio. Which I know that you were there.
I love
and like Les Mouches and John Carman, who was both our publicist at one point, was getting me into every club everywhere. I was on A-list everywhere and only like 16 years old.
Well, what a glamorous life at 16.
And that's how I actually found out that Bobby had stolen my vocals. I was on the dance floor dancing, and all of a sudden they mixed into this record, and I'm like dancing along, and I'm all of a sudden I hear my voice.
Yeah.
And it's, she knows what you're looking for. She knows how to make a score. She knows all the things you adore.
Yeah.
And I go, that's me. And she has a way, and I'm like going, oh my God. And I'm talking to my friends, and I go, that's me. And they go, we know who you are. Are you drunk or anything?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
No, this is me on the record. And I ran up to the DJ booth, and the DJ was named Casey Jones, who later became
Casey.
A really good friend of mine.
Yeah, did you get, because I remember the last time we spoke, I told you he was on Facebook. You got in touch with him?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
No, he's an angel, Casey.
He is such a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And from that's how we actually became friends. And then he actually started working for Billboard, and, you know, he also worked at Vinyl Mania.
Yeah.
And he also did the Dance Music Report. He was the original person who started the energy charts. I don't know if you knew that.
The high energy charts? No, I didn't know that.
Yes. He was the original person. And then the second person to follow was Dean Ferguson.
Yeah.
And then it was taken over by the incredible Jason Davis.
Sure. Well, okay, so you were performing live tracks and you were doing Broadway stuff. What part did Sly and Eileen have in that? Were they just handling your record career or what?
They were, okay, we also did the Rocky Horror Disco Show, and there was another musical that happened during that whole period that was really successful, but what happened was is after it opened, they didn't have enough money to keep it going, even though we had incredible reviews, to pay for the theater for the entire year, and it was a musical called Phantom of the Disco.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that or not.
No, I don't remember that. Yeah.
And it was really quite a wonderful show.
Who wrote it? Who wrote the music?
It was the book and music were written by a wonderful woman named Jill Wizoff. And she actually was in the original cast of Avant Garde, which the original cast album has just been released.
Cool.
After 30 years, we got the original cast album released.
Well, what label?
It's on Universal, famous EMG Universal.
Okay, cool. Well, so Cy and Eileen were just working your.
They were managing us with John Carmen at the time,
yeah.
And then I went solo, and then Jeffrey Robbins took over my management. I don't know if you remember Jeffrey, and then from there I was handled by Joe Maggio.
Who produced those first records? Was Tom Olson?
My very first records, no, was Steve Skinner.
Okay.
Because I had met him on Avant Garde.
Okay.
And I've been working with Steve for the last 30 years.
Long time, long relationship.
An incredible, incredible musician.
Yeah.
And he's famous for doing the musical arrangements for Rent the Musical.
Yeah, Bev, big hit too. My God.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and so have you been doing Broadway all along?
I've done it on and off, and we have a lot of talks on the table right now of a revival of Avant-Garde coming back into New York.
Oh, that would be cool.
So we're really excited about this all. So it's kind of like, actually, there's three musicals on the table that have been offered to me. It's got to be able to work out with what I'm doing with the record label and with my touring schedule, because I have definite things that I'm already contracted.
Were you familiar with those people up at the After Dark magazine, Patrick Pacheco and Chris Huizinga?
Say one more time, I can't.
At After Dark magazine, were you friendly with those people? Like,
oh yeah,
Patrick Pacheco and Chris.
I did a whole layout for After Dark, and I remember. There was a wonderful photographer that I shot with named Ken Duncan. Do you remember his work?
Oh, absolutely. He shot a lot of my friends. He never shot me, but he did, he did nude shots of Luis Christie back in the day. Yeah, he was a great photographer. He was great photographer.
He was amazing.
Great, and man, whatever. He was like one of the original, he was like at the very beginning of that original kind of glamour kind of, he was very good. He shot, he was famous for his dancers. Ballet dancers. There's a coffee table book of Ken Duncan. But Ken did a lot of the covers.
Of one of his books.
Oh, yeah.
He did. Everybody was in white, but they had red shoes on. Do you remember that book?
No, I don't remember it. But I met Ken many times. After Dark gave me a couple of big parties, and Ken was always there dancing with David Granoff and whatever. Yeah, no,
right.
He's a talented guy. He never photographed me, but he photographed a lot of my friends.
He was wonderful to work with, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
He had a definite vision, and you just had to listen to him,
sure.
And he guided you right to it.
Well, you know, Chris Huizinga there, After Dark, and Patrick Pacheco. Patrick's still around. Chris retired kind of, but Patrick, he's always on TV and whatever. He's still doing a lot of work.
I'm kind of surprised that the magazine isn't still around. It was a great magazine.
Oh, it was a great magazine, but it was, I don't know, the guy, Como, the guy who owned it, you know, passed away, and there was all this litigation, and... a whole bunch of stuff. No, I'm not. You know, magazines come and go. But I was going to say that they put me in touch with a guy, Mark Raboy.
I remember Mark.
Oh yeah, you know what? And he was brilliant.
I shot with him too.
Oh please, he did some of my favorite shots, Mark. And you know what? My favorite shot. And I've photographed with Albert Watson and Scavullo and oh please, a whole bunch of them. And Zabritsky, I mean, once I started with Casablanca, they lined me up with all the great photographers. But I'll tell you something. My favorite shot of all time is the shot that Mark Raboy did. He's still around. He's still and
is he still around?
Yeah, I think so. I ran into a woman who we were talking.
He was such a nice guy.
Yeah, who worked at a place on a comic book place. I was looking at comic books, and we were talking. She was an actress, and she was talking about headshots. And she said, oh, I'm going to have Mark Raboy do my head. This is about 2 years ago. I said, oh, wow, he's like the best. And I remember I had met Lucy Arnaz.
Oh, he's still working?
Yeah, I think he's still around, yeah. And in New York City. And you mentioned LaMouche. I did a benefit concert at LaMouche with Lucy Arnaz and Lorna Luft.
Oh,
and I had showed up, and I was it's funny. I was sitting between them, and I was with Lorna Luft on one side and Lucy Arnaz on the other. I said, "Jesus, the famous moms." I'm sitting between the daughters of these famous moms, Lucy Arnaz and Judy Garland, I had my headshot, and Lucy Arnaz says, "Oh," she said, who did your headshot? I said, Mark Raboy. And it was like, you know, of course, it wasn't like an acting headshot. It was like a glamorous thing. I said, oh, Mark Raboy, one of my favorites. She said, she had done a photo shoot with Mark Raboy. And Lucy, you know, Lucille Ball's, her favorite shot of her daughter of all time was the one that Mark Raboy did, you know, so.
Oh, isn't that a wonderful story?
Yeah, it is a good story, yeah, so, I mean, and they were delightful, the two of them, you know. They were,
and I
wild.
Remember LaMouche so well.
Oh, I loved LaMouche, and you know what?
Was off the, onto the other side, and they would even serve dinner there, but the stage was so small.
I know.
It was. And because, you know, I do a show with dancers and everything.
Sure.
Like, the dancers were falling off the stage. It was like oval circle.
Oh,
like,
please.
You know what I'm talking
I was
about?
There one night with Grace. I mean, you know, Grace invited me to tag along with her one night. You know, and she was supposed to go on at 2, and she didn't arrive until 3. I'll tell you, you know, the same old Grace Jones story. And she was in the dressing room, and she was getting, and passing the joints back and forth and getting high and drinking champagne.
Right.
And I'll tell you something. She didn't go on until 5 o'clock. And it was wild because the crowd, they were so pissed off. And then when she got on, everybody forgave her. You know, but she was like 4 hours late.
Yeah, we all have Grace Jones stories.
Oh, I think, Grace. Grace is the best, you know.
My last one was quite an interesting one. I did the Millennium Festival with her in Washington, on the steps of the Capitol with her and Martha Wash and Christine W.
Okay.
And Grace, we were scheduled to go on, and they had a shutoff time because of the police. And it really actually looked like that scene in Forrest Gump where you could just miles and miles and miles of people.
Right.
You know, all the way down you could see. And people were waiting for us to go on and waiting for us to go on. And Grace would not come out of her trailer. And here, you know, and it's like 110 in the shade.
Sure.
And poor Martha is, you know, just sweating.
Sweating bullets, just, yeah.
And she's the sweetest thing. And Grace would not go on until the sun went down. She made everyone wait 5 hours.
5 hours?
Yes.
Oh, she's just outrageous. You know, she really is. Did you see the last time she was in New York with that show at the Hammerstein Ballroom?
No, I didn't.
I'll tell you something. Fabulous, just breathtaking, fabulous. It was the best. She hasn't lost it. No, she's a grandmother. She's a grandmother
amazing.
Now. You know, but she was amazing. Grandma Grace, Grandma Grace Jones. And I
can't even think of her as a grandma.
Oh, I went up to her and I said, "Oh, how does it feel to be a grandma?" You know, they're all grandmothers. You know, Gloria Gaynor. Donna Summer. I think Donna Summer is a great grandmother.
Is she really?
Her oldest daughter Mimi has a daughter who's got a daughter. I think she's a great grandmother. Yeah, yeah. I said we're all great grandmothers and grandfathers, you know. So yeah, but I So Grace and I said, oh, for a grandmother, look at you, and she laughed. Yeah, she's a grandmother. Reminiscing. So you've been around a long time, and you're still kicking.
I've been in the business since I was 7.
7. What motivated you to, were you just like all your life?
It was all by accident. Oh. My parents, you know, were very into the social scene.
Uh-huh.
And we went to a party at a person named Mary Rogers' apartment, and who happened to be the daughter of Richard Rogers. And
was that in Manhattan, here in Manhattan?
It was here in Manhattan,
okay.
And I was 6 years old at the time. And my choral teacher from school was there. Mrs. Borth, and she went to the piano and had me get up and sing a couple songs, and just like I would do.
Just
you
like
know,
in
and,
a movie, Ernest.
And Mary Rogers asked my mother to come into the kitchen, and then they called me into the kitchen, and they said, would you like to be in a play? And I was like, sure.
Would you like to be in a play, little boy?
I was a little kid,
yeah.
And I was asked to come down to the Imperial Theater. And I got to audition for her father, and I got cast.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. Who knows? I've been doing
history.
It still today.
Well, what made you decide to start doing disco records, Ernest?
I don't know. I just, you know something? It's a combination because I love the music. It's theatrical. It's orchestral. It all just combined together. I remember the first time I walked into studio. And hearing and seeing everything, it all just sort of blended into this wonderful hybrid. And it worked for me. It just clicked. And everybody just accepted me. In that world, I was, you know, just accepted.
Yeah.
So it just was like, thank you. And I just fell right into it.
You remember the first time you walked into the studio. I remember the first time, too. I was Steve Rebell had invited me to some pre-opening parties. Mm-hmm. I had known Steve from Enchanted Garden out in Queens, and Nikki Sienna was playing out there. So you take the subway, and then he had Winnebagoes pick you up at the subway train and take you out to the, because it was at the ass end of nowhere out in Queens, you know. And
I don't even remember that club.
It was okay. You know, it's a pretty good club for a Queens club. But Steve always wanted to have a club in Manhattan. And then somebody had started putting studio together and couldn't really, you know, bring it over the top. It was taking forever and it wasn't falling together. And Steve jumped with Steve and Ian. They had a catering company. You know that was like a catering company.
No, I didn't know they had a catering
company. Yeah, it was a catering company.
I remember Steve very well.
Well, and so they had a catering company. And part of the Enchanted Garden thing was it was a restaurant, a very fancy schmancy sit-down restaurant. And it had the disco kind of room, you know. And then Steve got bitten by the disco bug. And then he had the opportunity to walk into the Studio 54, which was already... in progress, you know, a work in progress, but it wasn't, you know, they needed somebody like to really put it together and mm-hmm. wrap it up with a bow. And so Steve did it. And then, and I can remember, so, and then the pre-opening parties, they had a whole like 2 weeks before the opening night, which was April 26th. It was my birthday. And, but like a couple weeks before, I remember Aram Shefram, the guy who I produced, Cathedrals with, and Dennis Gannum, the guy who owns the record company, and the whole entourage from Pyramid Records, and I walked into studio.
I love that record of yours.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, so I just love it.
Oh, well,
one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, thank you. You know,
I've always been a big fan of yours.
Well, thank
always.
You so much. This is an interview about you, Ernest. Come on. Then, enough about me. I'm going to play Keep 'Em Dancing anyway, so from the compilation. So I remember the first time I was at studio. It was before it opened up officially. And I walked into that, you know how that long, extensive lobby?
Yes, it was like
and it was all beveled edge mirror glass. And,
right.
And it was like walking into,
Almost like walking into Oz.
Oh, no, well, it's like, have you ever been to that place in France where Marie Antoinette was?
Le Palace? No,
it's not a club. It's just where they actually lived in that huge, their palace, you know? Oh, what's the name of it?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
There's a whole room that's all beveled-edged mirrors.
Are you talking about Versailles?
Versailles, that's it. And there's a whole room there that's all, you walk into it and the whole, it's like the
very
whole.
Very ornate, very.
But the whole room is mirrored with these beautiful beveled-edged mirrors, you know, like mosaics of them. And when I walked into the studio, I said, oh my God, this is like. It was like I was walking into Versailles, and then I was overwhelmed. And I remember turning to Aram, this is before it even opened. And I said to Aram, I said, boy, is this a home run? Is this a hit? I got chills from that first time I was there. You know, it's interesting because I've been to, there are plenty of fabulous discos, you know, since. And, you know, I mean, there have been incredible ones around the world, you know. But I'll tell you something. I've never been overwhelmed. I got chills. I got goosebumps, chili bumps, when I walked into that Studio 54 for the first time.
It
took my breath away. He did such a magnificent job. And I'll tell you something. I had the best times there. The best times. Oh, please. And he always treated me with such grace and courtesy. Steve, you know, I don't know.
It was wonderful. I mean, the VIP room, everything you could, anything you wanted, they got you.
Oh, I don't want to go into that. Let's not even go into that. Talk about anything you wanted. I'll tell you something, Steve Rebell. I don't want to talk about it. You know,
I have a famous story about one of my shows at Studio.
Well, tell me. I only did two shows there. But one of the shows I did was Grace and the Village People. Ah, you know.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh,
it was me,
so
Grace Jones, and the Village People. Yeah, but go on.
Okay. I opened the show with I Think I Love You, and I started the show in bed. And, you know, and I was in my underwear,
yeah.
And my dancers would come out and I'd get me out of bed. Like, they came out as, like, the household help,
yeah.
And dressed me, and that's how we proceeded into the show.
Uh-huh.
Well, they kept holding me up in Steve's office, and we were being held, and, like, it was, like, an hour and a half, and we're like, well, what's going on? They're like, well, it's just we can't, there's some legal fire marshal law right now, and we can't have you go on yet. And so then, okay, it was time to go on. I get in the bed and do the whole show. The show was a huge hit. I remember Casey was there that evening, in fact, and he even reviewed it. And I debuted one of my hits that evening. I closed the show with Bad to Be Good. I don't know if you remember that record.
Yeah.
And after the show, they told me, you didn't know what happened, right? I said, no, what are you talking about? They said, somebody overdosed, and they put them in your bed, and they died in the bed.
Oh, my God. What a story.
And I was like...
The bed that was on the stage waiting for the show to begin.
Yeah, and I had to get in the bed right after the dead body was in there, and nobody had told me.
Well, Nigel Roberts, Nigel Roberts, the guy that's Chic and everybody, you know.
Right.
The producer, writer, arranger, whatever.
Right, with Bernard.
Yeah, yeah. And he was saying on an interview how that, you know, he'd big into cocaine, and he used to, you know, and he was making so much money with Chic, you know, he'd have overwhelming quantities of cocaine, and he would set himself up in the ladies' room.
I remember the ladies' room.
And the women would come in, and he'd give them cocaine, and he'd you know, screw them right there in the ladies' room.
Everybody went into the ladies' room.
I never went into the ladies' room.
It was enough
to go into the men's room at studio. I'll tell you. But no,
they had better lighting to check your makeup.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
So, but isn't that an amazing story? Nigel, he even admitted it. He said he was with his copious amounts of cocaine, he'd go in, and the attractive women that would come, sitting there like a vulture, like a hawk in the ladies' room, waiting for attractive women to come in, and he'd get them all wired on cocaine and just screw them right there in the ladies' room. You know, in one of the stalls. There's never going to be anything like studio. Never.
People were actually having sex.
Oh, you know, wait a minute. You know, I can remember a party I went there, and Studio 54 was the only place, the only time in my life I was ever asked to leave because I was too high.
Really?
Yes, and I'll tell you something, and I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it, but I used to, you know, please. I was used to get so high, and the garbage head, me, Mr. Garbage Head, and I remember, I was walking down. I had gone up to the DJ booth, and I how they used to have those power hitters. They used to these little plastic things. They used to blow the smoke in, the weed, and you used to shoot it into your lungs.
They called one hitters?
Power hitters or something like that. And Richie Kazar had this weed that was like from the moon. You know, from what I understand, now the marijuana now is much better and much more potent. But I can remember I was walking down. I had lovers with crepe shoals, and I was walking down the stairs from the. And I was a garbage head. I was high on everything, you know, vodka, Quaaludes, cocaine, whatever. And I had gotten an additional buzz from this weed that Richie Kazar had given me, and I slipped on the stairs, and I slid across the dance floor, and I whacked my head on that little step, you know, they stepped down to the dance floor, and I started.
Oh, yes.
And it was like Michael. It was
way.
Like Michael Jackson, blood on the dance floor. And I whacked my head. I slid across the dance floor, and I whacked my head, and I was bleeding all over the dance floor. And Steve Rebell came over, sweetheart that he was, and said, "DC, you're too high. I'll have to ask you to go home." and he had two of the bouncers pick me up and walk. Do you remember Bobby Wiener, the gossip columnist? Bobby, he had big.
My name is.
Oh, he was a big gossip columnist back in the 70s for one of the big papers, like the Post or something. And so Steve Rebell put me in a cab with Bobby Wiener, of all people, and he gave Bobby like $40 and he said, take him home.
Oh my god!
And you know that was oh please. It's only at Studio 54, and it was the only Ernest. It was the only time.
But it was more like, I want to take you home,
Ernest. It was the only time in my life I had been asked to leave a club, and of course it was going to be Studio 54. But I remember one time I went into that club with my friend Roxy Mizell, who worked for Atlantic Records. She was a promotion woman, and I walked into the club. It was a big party, and I walk in, and Steve rushes over, and puts a gram of cocaine in my hands, and then. He said, what do you want? What do you want? And I said, oh, give me some caviar. So he brings me one of those tins, those large tins of Beluga caviar, the blue tins, mm-hmm. and a spoon. Two spoons for me and Roxy. And a spoon, like it was like a cream of wheat cereal, and a bottle of champagne. And he said, enjoy
wonderful.
Yourself.
And Roxy and I
took the caviar with two plastic spoons. And a bottle of champagne. And you remember the stairs that used to go up to the second floor?
Mm-hmm.
We sat in the corner of the stairs at the very base of the two of us in the corner by the stairs, eating Beluga caviar and sipping and sipping a champagne from the. It was like only at Studio 54. Only at Studio. It was like amazing. I have the stories. I can go on and on. I have shoes that I used to always wear at the Studio 54 that I used to dance in that I've saved.
You still have them?
I still have them. And I won't throw them. I won't throw them out because, all the wonderful times I wore those shoes at Studio 54. I have them in the back of my closet. I won't throw them out. You know, really, it's my 70s Studio 54 shoes.
Well, I actually
my boogie woogie dancing shoes. Oh, okay, my original boogie woogie dancing shoes and from Studio 54.
Go.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, let's talk about the. The compilation, The Legends of Vinyl. How were you inspired to do this? It's a massive project, and I'm very impressed.
Oh my god!
And it sounds and the stuff is terrific. I'm not being nice. People say, oh, you're just being nice. No, I'm not being nice. If I couldn't say something wonderful about them, I'd just avoid the subject. But it's a terrific job, and the stuff is great. So thank you so much. When did
it
you decide?
It literally was the hardest project I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, tell me about
it. And it was one of my earliest projects I took on at the label, because, you know, I do A&R at the label now.
Yeah, okay.
Also. And I thought
What was the label? What was the label? What's the label again?
It's Famous EMG Universal.
Okay.
And I really actually thought, oh, if this is only going to take me 2 weeks, I can knock everything together in 1 week. I can just, sequence it and have it ready done by the second week. Well, it took 2 years.
I
went to 7 casts. Of course, you were in the original cast.
Okay.
But the problems that we occurred, not only did we have attitude problems from artists that wanted exorbitant advances that didn't care about people with AIDS, which really upset me. I'm not going to name who they were. And some requests were like $1,000 a bottle of wine from Argentina to be sent to them in the UK from one diva, plus name billing over everybody else. And it was an all favored nations contract, as you know.
Yeah.
We all got the same contract.
Sure.
And all of us gave of our time freely and our tracks and went in and did all the work for free, as all the remixers did, the wonderful remixers. Every single artist on the vinyl cut has been amazing to work with. They were on my radio show, Dance Dudes Today, on Disco 935.
When is that?
When
does that air? Tell me about the radio show real quick.
Say again?
Tell me about the radio show real quick. When is that on?
Oh, the radio show. It's Dance News Today, and it's kind of like a talk music show, and it's kind of where we give 1 hour to the artists to allow them to talk about their full career and the music industry. But we also interview producers, remixers, arrangers from anywhere from the past right up into today.
Okay.
And this whole last season, we dedicated to the legends of dance.
Okay, so you got
every week we would either have an artist or a remixer or a producer that was involved in Legends of Dance.
Yeah.
And each artist was given 1 full hour, and they got to play all the songs of their career and tell the stories of their career. And some of the stories that came out literally were shocking.
Well, you know, I was going to say my Disco Jews program. It's not an interview show. It's not a chat show. And so, I mean, my having guests on, you know, it was like totally by accident. Some of the stories. I mean, I've spoken with a lot of Tina Charles. I mean, the list is on and on. And some of the stories, they're just amazing, you know. And these people get on with me, and it's the list of Frangio Lay, and it goes on and on. Tom Moulton, forever.
Right, and for 20 years now.
Yeah, and some of the stories are just the best. And you know, once they let their hair down and they start being honest and candid,
a good friend of ours wonderful. Came on and shocked us, me and VJC, my co-host. Who's actually the program director of 935.
Yeah, I know him for, yeah.
When Bob Esty came on there.
Oh, Bob Esty, my producer.
He came on and told some stories about Giorgio and the Donna Summer days and Barbara Streisand and all the what happened during the making of No More Tears and the Once Upon a Time record.
Oh, right, yeah. I was out there for all that. It was cool.
Oh, my gosh, shocked us. He actually did even mention a story about you. Something you were in the backseat of a car, and you were taken out to I can't even remember the whole story. I'd have to listen back to the interview. Did you go out to Barbara Streisand's house or something?
Oh, that's wild. It was wild, yeah. You know, Barbara Streisand, she's a wild woman. She had, you know, she's a Brooklyn girl.
You corn or something?
But one thing I thought was interesting about Streisand, she's a Brooklyn girl, and she, you know, she's her roots are still, you know, she for lunch she had Progresso Escarole soup and a bottle of Dr. Brown cream soda. Isn't that wild?
Wait a minute, a can
for lunch, out of a can, Progresso Escarole soup and Dr. Brown cream soda.
That's so funny. Yeah, she could have anything in the world.
Well, when she was like, I guess her mom gave her that when she was a kid, you know, whatever.
So that was
okay, back to the Legends of Vinyl. So you got all the divas. I got to tell you something. I had a friend, Louis, who's trying to put together a show in New Jersey, and some of these girls will remain nameless. Oh, please, you know. It was for a charity, and it was for muscular dystrophy, and they wanted limousines, and they wanted rooms full of red roses, and they wanted, you know, bowls full of blue M&M candies. I mean, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
These requests are outrageous.
I'll tell you something, and I said, and no disrespect to any of these women, because they're very talented, or they wouldn't have made the hit records in the first place. But
right?
I said, you know, I said to Louis when he was telling me about a couple of these women getting the problems he was having, I said, listen, I said, they're negotiating with you like they're fucking Barbara Streisand, Donna Summer, you know, these women are great and talented and wonderful. I said, but they should be happy that you've invited them to participate in the show. You can't go on and on.
I
mean, it's not a contest. You know, and who can get roses and first class limousines and, you know, bottles of champagne? It's ridiculous, you know. And I'll tell you something else. That was back in the day. That was a long time ago when people were treated like that, just one after another. You know, that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, they do still send the limos for a gig. They definitely do still do that, and they do give you a nice dressing room. So that's that. You know, that is away from the crowd.
Yeah.
So that is done. So you know, you are treated very well when you perform at a club, but some of the requests we were getting were outrageous. But the actual final cast lineup, I call it a cast lineup of the Legends of Dance, was just wonderful. They provided no problems whatsoever. They were more than willing to do any interviews, and are still doing interviews. In fact, I'm about to ask you to do an interview on Artists Exposed. Will you please do an interview on Artists Exposed?
Oh, please. Of course. You know, what about Wardell Piper? She's on this thing too, right?
She was the
actual... Wasn't she... Hi, Wardell, if you're listening. Wasn't she?
Hey,
with,
Wardell, I love you.
Wasn't she with?
She is one of the reasons I got in this business because I was taken out by John Carmen to her debut party for Super Sweet.
Wasn't she with Eileen Berlin too?
Yes.
Oh, that's what I thought. Yeah.
And I was just a little kid, and I actually did her makeup.
Wild.
And that impressed me so much, and we actually got in contact over Facebook. She was the last artist to be added to Legends. We had ended, you know, the lineup. We were ready to go, and I got her in right at the last minute, and she had just done a remix on this the song Baby Doll, and got it in right at the last minute. I mean, literally, she called her producer and got that track to us, I think, within 24 hours. It was like that quick it happened. And we actually had the graphic artist redo the artwork.
Cool.
It was like...
Great cover, great artwork. I love everything about it. Where can you buy it?
One thing we got to mention about Legends of Dance.
What?
Part of the proceeds are going to GMHC for AIDS. And that
I mentioned it, yeah.
And that is so such an important part because that is why we all gave of our time so freely. And one of the reasons why I did it is the people have forgot about AIDS and what's going on with it, and it is on the rise again. And when I met with the executives of GMHC and they showed me all the demographics of what is happening, I said, you know, this is time. I got to do something because I can help here. And so basically, I contacted the people I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And most everybody was more than willing. And it turned out to be just a wonderful. But the one thing that my guideline was, there had to be every type of dance represented from the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. So I had to make sure that each song was correct and that each song was correct to be into the package. Mm-hmm. So I had to go through the artist's repertoire, and then to when we would find the tracks, we would, like, some of the labels had gone out of business or trying to find the licensing of who owned the track, and then if we could get the a cappella to remix it. And sometimes when we would open the box, the tape would be, you know, a wreck.
I know,
and we
had,
would have to bake the tape.
Yeah, bake it in the microwave oven and transfer it digitally.
Tape.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was one artist that it didn't turn out. And she went in and did her vocal over. And in one take, she redid If My Friends Could See Me Now. And that was Linda
Clifford.
Well,
that's Linda, I have that. That's the first one I've got queued up after we finished the interview. So was that the original track, multi-track, or is that a whole new recording?
She went in and redid the vocals. We got the back, not the backing vocals. She got, there's a, one part of the original vocal, but that's all we could keep. She did the rest of it all. And I've got to tell you, she sings better today than she did back in, I believe the record was released in 79.
Around there, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, she sings better today. And she's such a sweetheart to deal with. She is such a nice, nice woman. I mean, I love her to death. And she also gave us, that other wonderful song, Save This Love, which I felt that just that the title and the emotion of the song was so perfect for this compilation.
Yeah.
The artist lineup was wonderful. Can I read out you the artist lineup?
You read it, and yeah, read, because I'm very impressed. I mean, I was saying to you before, I mean, I'm going to spend, like, after we get off from the interview, I'm going to play, like, an hour of stuff from the CD set. And I've only, you know, I've got, like, 10 tracks, but I'm not going to be able to play the entire 2-CD set. But I'm really impressed with the people that you finally got lined up. So who are they?
Okay. Well, of course, I'm on there. But Lonnie Gordon, and she's very famous because she was one of the original PWL artists out of the UK.
Yeah.
Nostera, and that she was our representation of what was considered New York freestyle.
Okay.
And with the song Summertime, Summertime. And then, of course, Linda Clifford.
I got, that's what I'm going to play, Summertime, Summertime. I got Wait, For All We Know, Die Hard Lover, Dangerous, Keep Them Dancing, Maybe This Time.
Die Hard Lover, again, mm-hmm. remixed by the incredible New York remixers. And also, Keith was in there doing the programming on that, the Keith Kemper, who I just, again, spent the last 18 hours with, working with, a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Maybe this
time. And
with
the New York remixers who are incredible. These guys are the hottest remixers today. I have never worked with people who can turn out a record so quickly and hear insight to a record and just turn it into a whole new record.
Uh-huh.
Like Taking Sooner or Later, that basically was basically what I called a clapping cowbell record out of the 80s.
Yeah.
And made it into a real power dance record that
it was a wonderful mix,
today.
Yeah. What about Maybe This Time? Is that an original track or is that a remake?
That was a re-edit. That was a special re-edit, and we had to trace that, and we went through Barry Tomes through the UK, through Gotham Records, and he got me to Marvin Howell, who actually, and what was the name of the label over here who Marvin owned? Oh, gosh. Let me think. It was called ERC, and they were out of the West Coast. And what was so weird was who actually worked on that record was Horace Jack Tolson, who actually did the original arrangements for Die Hard Lover for Linda Imperial. So we got him to get us the original tracks for Die Hard Lover to remix for Linda.
That's a New York club mix too.
Yes, that is a New York New York remixers. Yes, and Linda, who is a dear friend of mine, is also on this compilation with Die Hard Lover, and also Jessica Williams is on there with a song called Mingle with the Night. And Jessica is, whether you know this or not, has been on so many disco records, and people don't know that it's her. Like Love and Desire, she was the vocalist on.
Sure.
Many records she was on. And other artists who were on there, like another one of my Megatone, because I've been on many labels. Part of my Megatone family was Magda, and she was on there with Dangerous, and, oh goodness, what was the other song we put on there of Magda's? Work That Body, which is out of her Wide Angle years when we were together on Wide Angle.
Okay.
And she's a dear friend of mine. Another artist we had on there who is another dear friend of mine is Pamela Stanley, who I know you know.
Sure.
With the new remix of, new and improved remix by Elliot of It Looks Could Kill, and the almighty definitive remix of I Don't Want to Talk About It.
Uh-huh.
And then another New Yorker remix of, it's called a song called Eat You Up by an artist out of the UK. She's not really well known here, but her name is Angie Gold. I don't know if you know her.
That name. Sure, I know Angie Gold, yeah.
Right. And the New Yorkers remixed that. And again, Keith Kemper did amazing work doing keyboard work with the New York remixers. And they worked at another fabulous job on that. So I love these guys. These guys are so great to work with. And they're so nice. It's like they're just normal, nice, laid back. There's no fighting. It's like no drama.
Yeah.
There's... And nobody parties. All we do is iced coffee. Yes, we do work all night long because we had to make deadlines.
Sure.
And then another wonderful artist out of the UK was Nikki French, and she came in with Total Eclipse of the Heart. And then we got Colonel Abrams, who represented the early house.
Oh, I love him, yeah.
Oh, great guy.
I love his work.
Really
yeah.
great guy with the song Trapped. And then we got my best friend, who passed away several years ago, and left me the rights to parts of his catalog, David Diebold, who actually was one of the members of the Megatone family, and he was also on Wide Angle with Work That Body, which also featured Magda.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Wardell on there with Baby Doll, Wardell Piper. And then, we have somebody who, gosh, I wonder if you know him. He sang the song, Keep Him Dancing.
D-Ski LaRue, yeah.
And he turned in this great tracks, and we just had to have it on there.
Oh,
so,
thank you so much. Oh, Oh, stop. Then, oh, stop it.
Well, I just love it. And the fact that it's real strings when they come in.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. That was wonderful, wonderful synthesized kind of record. Yeah, but it's very retro. That's like a really late 70s retro sounding thing, you know, and I really like
it.
You know,
is, but yeah. It does have a new bass line to it. It's percolating.
But I love it. I love it, you know. It's like, you know, what can I say? I don't even think that, you know, when I think of these records, there were so many people involved with producing and arranging and mixing and the studios and the engineers and the assistant engineers and the synthesizer player and the programmers and. You know, and I sometimes
people don't realize what sometimes, how many people
sometimes
are behind
I listen,
your record.
You know, sometimes I listen to them.
The
you know,
remixers.
I listen to them like they're not even my record. You know, it's like there were so many wonderful creative people involved with putting these things together for me over the years. You know, and Bob Esty. You know, Bob Esty was such a fabulous.
Oh,
person.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. He's incredibly talented. You know,
I had
him on the show too.
Did one of my favorite records of all time. Which was, rumor has it, which I did cover, which has never been released. Ian Levine still has the 24 track.
Did
in
you
England.
Record? Did you record for Ian?
Yes, I did.
Oh, how long ago was that?
That was God. I actually recorded him with him two times, when I was in the late 80s, and then no, wait, there was one time earlier. I went in and I did a vocal onto a 7th Avenue record. And they put it out under 7th Avenue.
Well, you know, I did it about a year ago. I did a track with him for a one of his compilation things.
It was a record. God, what was the name of it?
Crash and Burn.
Mad. Do you remember that record?
No. I enjoyed working with him. He was a great guy, and I'm very, very happy with the record that they made with me. It was on, like, Northern Soul. 2011 compilation, one of those two seasons.
Oh, yeah. Didn't Jimmy work on that?
Yes, he did some of the remixes, which is why he's a brilliant guy, brilliant worker.
Jimmy did a lot of work on Legends of Dance. We have to mention Jimmy Michaels. He's just the greatest.
Oh, he's the best.
Guy.
He's the best. Well, he's so good, you know, and he's got an album coming
and,
out by
you know,
himself.
I wouldn't have met him if it wasn't for VJC from 935, and Jimmy has actually become a very, very dear friend.
Yeah, he mentioned to it. He said, you're like brothers. He said, you're like brothers.
He's worked on so many projects. He actually is one of the people that helped restore the actual tracks of Avant Garde, which it was really chancy because this was a major restoration project.
Yeah.
Because these tapes had not been touched for 30 years, and they were actually supposed to come out on Boardwalk, which was, you know, a kind of a side label.
That was the label that they put together for Joyce Bogart after they left Casablanca.
Right. Yeah. But another group was on there called Get Wet. Do you remember them?
Oh, I knew Get Wet. I knew them. I knew the guy. Who was the guy's name? What was the kid's name? I knew both of them, the guy and the girl. They were great.
Becca?
Yes, that guy, yeah.
Becca and the girl was named Sherry.
That's right, Sherry. Oh, please. They were great.
Yes.
And they
were so much fun. They reminded me of, they were 50s movie or 60s movie stars.
Oh, they were terrific. They were both of them.
Annette Funicello and
Frankie Avalon, whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
What about let's see, I was going to say did you know that Justin Timberlake purchased the rights to the movie rights to the Casablanca record story Spinning Gold? Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Justin Timberlake, yeah. And they're putting together a movie. I wonder if he's going to try to play Neil Bogart. I mean, he looks like as much like Neil Bogart as my cat looks like your dog. You know, I'll tell you something.
Give our inside story, or what's going to be the story on this?
I have no idea, but you know what? I was just thinking. You know, do you think he'd even dare try to play Neil Bogart? I mean,
I don't know because Neil was such a character.
He was, you know, and I'll tell you, Neil was a short little. Pudgy Jew from Brooklyn,
I know. and he wasn't even
the slightest resemblance to Justin Timberlake. But we'll see what happens, you know. Also,
I know. I mean, I towered over Neil. And of course, I loved
Neil, though. But, you know, I'll tell you that. And I was joking on the show a couple of weeks ago. I said, and who's going to play Joyce Bogart? Jennifer Lopez? And I said, and who's going to play Donna Summer? Beyonce. You know, if Justin Timberlake is going to be playing Neil Bogart. Well, we'll see what happens. But it's going to be called Spinning Gold. I hope it works out, you know. They said, who's going to... One of my listeners sent me an email. Said, who's going to play DC LaRue? I said, nobody's going to play DC LaRue. Excuse me.
I'm wondering. Let's see. Who could we? Who would the?
No, but listen. Listen. If they're going to make a movie, it's going to be about Kiss. It's going to be about Donna.
Oh, the Kiss would have to be.
And that's going to be it. You know, they're not going to go to Bob Esty or DC LaRue or Paul Jabbar. None of those. You know.
Oh, they have to.
They don't have to. I'm sorry. They don't have to. Okay, now here we go. We're just chatting. I got to play some music here.
Okay, wait a minute.
Where's this compilation?
Norma Lewis, yeah. And the last record that Phoebe Snow ever recorded is on this record, which I did the duet with her, A Fugitive of Love. And that was her last record, and she passed away before this compilation got released. And the best thing about this compilation was it entered the world charts at number one. We have the number one record in the world right now.
Well, it's an amazing compilation. Where can people buy it? Is it on iTunes and Amazon?
Well, we are sold out of all the physical copies. Thank you, God. And we're trying to press them up as quick as we can.
Well, it's a beautiful... What did I say to you? I said I wanted you to send me one. Because I would like an actual two-CD set.
I don't even have a copy. Can you believe that? And I produced it.
I believe it. Yeah. And when can people buy it in the
every
stores?
Every single retailer. It's the big ones. You could Amazon, iTunes, Rhapsody. The first maxi single was pulled, which was Sooner or Later, and that, you know, is up in the top 10 in the world.
Yeah, but what about the? Can I go to Amazon and buy the actual CDs?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. If there's any left, we were told they were completely sold out.
Okay.
And they're trying to press them up as quick as they can. And we are so thankful for people for buying them. Because you know what? They're giving back to humanity. Every time you buy that CD, you're giving... If we can save or make somebody's life better that has HIV, then we've done something good for humanity then.
For sure.
And that makes me happy. Because this project, I got to tell you, put me through hell.
Well, it sounds like you've worked your butt off. But I think it's a wonderful. It's a great little package, and I can't see it being anything less than super successful. Okay, I got to play some music.
We've been
over an hour talking, so we got to play some music.
Okay.
I'm going to play the Linda Clifford thing right off, if my friends could see me now. And I can't wait to hear it. I mean, this happens to be one of my favorite records from back in the day, you know. So we're going to play some stuff. Thank you very much, Ernest, for being on the show. I've just been delightful.
Thank you so much.
And everything is working. I can't believe it. Everything's working. So we did it. It was successful. Oh, my goodness. Because I don't have anybody here.
And got the number one compilation. So thank you so much for being on the compilation.
It was my pleasure.
It was my pleasure.
And I'm in great company.
And I hope you will join us on the Legends of Dance tour.
Oh, when is it going to be a tour? Really?
We're starting to book dates now, and I believe we're going to open in the UK first.
Well, of course, but you didn't even mention that to me.
You didn't get the email?
Well, when did you send it out?
For everybody, if you've gotten strange emails from stating it's from me, really check it out and contact me because my computer has been hacked. So I'm trying to tell everybody this.
Well, when are you projecting this tour thing?
We're projecting it to probably start in February.
First I've heard of it. I would love to do some shots with you for some shows. It'll be in the UK. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, and what we're going to do is wherever, like, if some artists are together, we can do, like, you know, five or six artists, and if we can get the whole group together, that would be wonderful. We'd love to do a big Legends of Dance party here in New York.
Oh, how exciting, yeah.
And do a whole evening and, like, have the top DJs of the day come in and spin in between and then have the artists go on.
That sounds like a winner, really. Well, why don't you send me an email, and we'll talk next week. We'll talk during the week.
I would
love to jump in and do some of the shows, yeah.
Great. And we're also planning the Legends of Dance party with everybody getting together. And just having everybody in one room would be such a wonderful
evening. What a great, yeah. To have videos and and put them on YouTube and have everybody just jumping around and laughing and dancing. Yeah, that would be terrific. Okay, Ernest, take care. And I'm gonna play the Linda Clifford thing now. And
okay,
it's been delightful
so
having
much.
You. And I can't thank you enough. And like I said, the compilation's great. And I advise everybody, you know, just run out and buy it. Because it's not just for a good cause. You know, you hear that old corny thing. Well, for a good cause. It's a great, great dance compilation, okay? So I'm going to play the Linda Clifford thing now, and I can't thank you enough once again. And so, and maybe we'll have you back in 6 or 8 months. We'll see what happens.
More chit-chat,
more gossip.
And
God bless you for being
on this. I'm so thankful for
more,
you.
More disco. What did I say to Tina Charles? More disco secrets revealed. Okay.
Yeah, boy, could I give you a lot of disco secrets.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, between the two of us. Okay, so take care.
Okay.
And we'll speak with you again soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you soon, DC.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.